Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pet. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Reminder, the Locked On Podcast Network is going live with an NBA trade deadline special this Thursday, so that's tomorrow's episode, live at 1:30 Eastern Time on YouTube on the Locked On Fantasy Basketball channel. This is hosted by David Locke, also hosted by our fantasy basketball expert in Josh Lloyd, plus all of the experts, the local experts here at the Locked On Podcast Network. We'll be breaking it down, all the deals going on here in a crazy trade deadline, given from the fantasy experts and also from the local angles. It starts at Thursday, 1:30 Eastern, 90 minutes before the trade deadline on YouTube at the Locked On Fantasy Basketball channel. So don't miss it. Thursday, 1:30 Eastern. Hey, Matt, what's going on? How you doing? We're less than 24 hours from the deadline. How you feeling?
I'm feeling, you know, good for the most part. What's up, Bulls Nation? Feeling a little anxious because I feel like I'm not alone in that. I would like to see the Bulls make some kind of move that would put them in a better situation moving forward. And I think there's a lot of complaining from Bulls Twitter right now, people being like, you know, do something, you know, get some picks, you know, get rid of Felicio's contract, get rid of Jabari, do this, do that. And I just, honestly, I don't see anything happening for the Bulls between now and this time tomorrow. I mean, you know, I'm asking around, I'm talking to people and trying to get a gauge on what, if any, of the talks are going on at the Advocate Center right now. And I just, you know, I'm getting a whole lot of nothing in return as far as the Bulls in any kind of ongoing talks. So we always want something exciting to happen at the deadline, and a lot of times we are disappointed, and I feel like this year's going to be one of those.
I know
years.
Both of us are pulling all of our strings here, and I'm going West Coast to East Coast, and everybody I know too. Like they're like half the teams are like, are you kidding? I haven't heard, like, it's been radio silence about the Bulls. And I'm like, our fans are asking, like, all of us as Bulls fans are asking. So, you know, every time a trade breaks, we're like, how can the Bulls be involved? What's the angle here? And, right, you know, for the most part, it's been radio silence. So
I think, like, honestly, the one thing that might be happening, and it's just we're not hearing about it because the Bulls are still trying to get the best offer. And, I'm not reporting anything. I'm just saying the most likely thing that could happen between now and this time tomorrow is the Bulls deciding to ship Bobby Portis somewhere for an asset. That, to me, is more likely than trading Jabari. It's more likely than trading Rolo. It's more likely than trading Chris Dunn. And, you know, these people that keep telling me, we got to get Felicio's contract out of here. Like, let's, you know, do we need to do that? And I'm like, dude, nobody's taking that. So I think if the Bulls do decide they don't want to have that difficult contract negotiation with Bobby and want to capitalize on the fact that he looks pretty good right now, they might, you know, send him to a playoff team that needs some front court depth. But, I mean, outside of that, I'd even be surprised to see that happen.
That's true. But do you find it odd, and we're even, like, getting texts over the last 12 hours since our episode yesterday, like, do you find it odd that there has been kind of radio silence about Portis's interest from other teams in general? Like, even just, like, reading through places that you would think he would fit, like, there has been no interest whatsoever. Like, think about his restricted free agency this summer, and maybe that just comes with the injury, and everybody kind of forgot who he was last year, and even with just the two games that he's been good. Do you find that kind of odd?
I think it makes sense that there might be a lack of interest around the league in Bobby, because, as you said, like, he's like he came back from injury and he's had two good games on the Bulls' most recent part of the schedule. But that's it. You know, other than that, he has had a really down year fighting various injuries. Even when he was healthy between the injuries, was not playing very well. His outside shot wasn't falling. So, like, we were talking about how the latest version of Bobby Portis that we have seen in these last couple of games, including pouring in 28 points in the first half, that is a valuable NBA player. And it's just a matter of, you know, a lot of teams are looking in a lot of places to try and do what they could do to either better their roster for a playoff run or set themselves in better position for next season and the offseason before next season. So I'm not entirely surprised that there aren't a whole lot of teams, if there aren't a whole lot of teams, you know, knocking down the Bulls' door to say, hey, can we have Bobby Portis? What will it take to get Bobby Portis? Because The dude hasn't really been on display this season.
So we'll see. I think that's interesting, though. I think, yeah, like, out of any asset that we have right now, if you're going to move anybody, like, he probably would draw you back the most value. And that sounds kind of crazy right now, but it's true. Like, you have a little bit of control on him. The money is tight for a contender, but he can provide you instant scoring off the bench now that he's fully healthy. Like, cross your fingers, knock on wood.
Yeah.
Last thing I got, and then we'll get to our interview with Mark Karanzolas. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to bounce around Bulls season and then dive into some trade deadline stuff as well. Matt, Woj bomb early morning, I guess late last night if you were still up. Couple more too coming in, but the most notable one, Tobias Harris going to the 76ers. I don't think anybody really thought that this was coming, but what did you think about this deal? And now this is a sneaky move by the Clippers just saying basically, hey, you know what? We're watching what the Lakers are struggling doing. AD put us on his list, so now let's try to make some moves to see if we can clear as much cap space as possible for two max deals and see what we can do here.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good deal for both teams. You put Tobias Harris into the mix. Agreed. In Philly, and your starting five of Tobias Harris, Redick, Simmons, Embiid, and Jimmy is, like, all of a sudden rivaling with the Warriors, probably the second best starting five in the league right now. Like, that is a really good starting five. And of course, that, you know, they also get Boban, who just is a prize of his own. and on the flip side, the Clippers, like, what they did was pretty sneaky and pretty brilliant, because you think about how, if they decide, all right, we're going to shed Tobias, who's been one of our best and most efficient players this season. We're kind of on the bubble of the Western Conference playoffs right now. We are going to say, you know what? We don't necessarily want to be the eighth seed that badly. They can fall out of the playoffs, keep a pick away from Boston, and in the meantime, also netted what looks to be pretty valuable 2021 unprotected Miami first-round pick, because that team is going nowhere. So all of a sudden, as you said, they have a very interesting trade package to offer to Anthony Davis if they want to. And it sounds like they want to.
The thing I've been poking around now, considering this deal, is the last trade chip on that Clippers team. And real quick, so if they want to get rid of Gallinari, he's making about $20, $21 million this season, and he's on the books next season for $21 million. Been a pretty good offensive piece for the Clippers this year. Dude, I didn't know he was shooting like 44.7% from three on five attempts per game. Like, that is pretty good for Gallinari. He had an ACL surgery, was out for an entire season back like 4 years ago. I get that. So the money is what's weighing them down, but it sounds to me, and I've touched base with a couple Clippers writers this morning, and it sounds to me that they're going to try to actively move him in the next 24 hours. And if they can't do that, then oh well, but they're going to try to move him. If they came to the Bulls, and the Bulls should be picking up the phone right now to see if there's anything that they can do, would you be interested in doing that? If you can get a first round pick, and it probably won't be the Clippers first round pick, but if you could do that, maybe. But if it is one of those picks that they just received, the 76ers protected pick in 2020, if it's the Miami unprotected pick in the 2021 draft, and you had to attach like Bobby Portis to it, would you do that to take on Gallinari's money for one more year?
If there were an asset like that attached to it, absolutely. I would do that. You know, it would be tough to see Bobby go, because I think he's been a really positive, you know, part of this Bulls transitionary period. You know, the crazy thing to think about is he's the longest tenured Bull right now. And seeing him go would hurt. Not only for what he brings with his scoring off the bench, but he seems to be a very well-liked guy, a well-liked teammate. And, you know, the coaching staff likes him. The front office likes him. But if it were the Bulls don't want to pay Bobby, you know, upwards of $10 million per season over, you know, a four-year deal this summer, then, all right, let's see what we could do and see if we can get an asset. If they are willing to take on that the unwanted Gallinari money, they could probably get a nice asset if they are doing a swap and they send Bobby over there. I just don't know, based on everything we've heard about what the Bulls are and are not willing to do right now, that they would be interested in taking on that contract, because it sounds like they are still very much in love with the idea of financial flexibility, and that in any of the talks that started even about Jabari months ago, when it seemed like they were giving up on the Jabari experiment, that they would be open to sending him away, but they don't want to take on long-term bad money to do so. So unless that's changed, it's kind of a moot point.
Right. I understand that from the Bulls' point, but like, if you're being realistic about what the offseason's going to bring, think about all the top-tier free agents. Like, I know a lot can change in 4 or 5 months, but let's be realistic. How many of those have even sniffed or even mentioned the Bulls in any conversations? None of them.
None.
So, like, we should be realistic about our expectations, right? And I'm not saying we shouldn't try, because we should. This is a very crucial offseason. But if you can get a first-round pick that's 2 years out or a year out just to take on Gallinari for another year, a player that desperately can play the wing and shoot threes, what we need, I know he's not a good defensive player. I know that. I realize that, but he can score and he can shoot threes, and who knows? Who knows what he could bring? But a first round pick for that, I would be open to it. But there's only 24 hours to do that, so it would be a rush decision. But the way the chips are stacking up, Matt, here, it's telling me that the tier one free agents, we have no shot. Tier two already seems like it's starting to be decided pretty quickly here.
Yeah,
that leaves us in tier three, tier four.
Well, because the most exciting, you know, person in tier two that Bulls fans were talking about a lot was Tobias Harris, and I thought, you know, he's kind of borderline between tier one and tier two at this point based on the season he's having, and now it sounds like the Sixers are very much planning to convince him to stay, convince Jimmy to stay, and have this, you know, this big four with those two, Embiid and Simmons, to build around and become the new powerhouse of the Eastern Conference. Well, you know, that's their plan anyway. So I think you are very much correct when you're saying, you know, people say, well, okay, the Bulls aren't getting any of the big names, but what about the slightly smaller names? And I'm saying, I don't even know if this Bulls team is going to go out there and get any of those guys this summer. I really don't. Like, until we see something that proves contradictory to what we know and what we have seen this front office do or fail to do when it comes to signing free agents, like, I'm going to keep going along and thinking that the status quo is the status quo. And that sucks. That is a really sucky reality, but it is the reality.
Agreed with you. And a lot of those other guys that we've mentioned, like Rozier and Russell, and I don't know, you name it. A lot of those guys are restricted too. So you can chase those guys all you want, but they're going to go back to their teams probably. So that's the game you have to play too. And you could strike out a million times there. So it's the reality. And I hate to be negative, but that's reality at the end of the day. And like I said it, I would be willing to chase Kemba, but it seems like Charlotte's trying to do everything possible to keep him. And that would be the one top tier guy right now that you're even in the ballpark of probably chasing.
Yeah.
Tobias was the other one, and he if he has any success with the Sixers, they're going
to
keep him.
What I will say is that I don't know if you listened to that podcast with Schanowski and Casey the other day.
Yep.
Casey Johnson did say one thing he knows for sure, has been told, knows for sure, point guard is a position that will be addressed this offseason. So I don't know if that means they're going to go out there and try and sign a veteran point guard to, you know, to help this rebuild along and kind of be a mentor to the younger guys and hopefully be a better point guard than Chris Dunn. And Casey said, you know, it might be in the draft. If they don't get number one, they, you know, they might look at Ja Morant. That's just speculation at this point. But he said whether it's the draft or free agency, point guard will be addressed.
All right, well, there you have it. All right, let's get to our interview. Without further ado, here is Mark Karanzolas from Bulls HQ. You know him from SB Nation's Bulls blogger on Twitter at MK Hoops. Without further ado, here's Mark Karanzolas.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Lockdown Bulls. Haven't talked to him in a long time. He's won a very important bet since the last time we talked to him. He is Mark Karanzolas, the Aussie Bulls fan. Follow him on Twitter at MK Hoops. Check out the Bulls HQ podcast. You can follow that on Twitter at Bulls HQ Pod. Also catch his work for Bulls Blogger on Twitter at Bulls Blogger. Mark, welcome back, man. How did you celebrate winning your bet with C Red Fred? First and foremost, let's get the important stuff out of the way.
Well, I haven't had a chance to celebrate just yet because Fred hasn't taken up his end of the bet just yet. I'm assuming he wants to wait until the end of the season. I don't know why, given that the result is already swung my favor. But whilst I've won the bet, I haven't necessarily reaped the rewards of the bet just yet. But hopefully that comes in a few months or so.
Man, I was trying to get him to wear a Heinrich jersey on his guest star appearance on Outsiders, but he wasn't going for it, man.
Yeah, it would have been a tough sell. I think any more than the allotted 5 days that he has to wear it at the moment, I think he's pretty much no chance of wearing it. But if I could just get some proof of him in it, that's all I need, basically.
Well, we'll keep working him from several angles for you until we get the just payment for winning the bet.
I appreciate it.
Mark, let's stay with the trade deadline since that's where we started the show with. Kind of been quiet here, at least among what the Bulls are saying and kind of what they're doing in the NBA. But Bulls Twitter in general, obviously, we want to be involved as much as possible. 24 hours left, and by the time people are listening to that, it's going to be even less than that. What are you expecting the Bulls to do in the next 24 hours, and what do you hope that they do?
Well, I'm not expecting much, given their two main guys that we're sort of hearing or have talked about all season is Robin Lopez and Jabari Parker, and those two guys are effectively on expiring deals, and they're on huge deals, meaning getting back expiring money for those guys is probably unlikely. Maybe you can swing a trade for Jabari Parker for Enes Kanter or something like that, which... look, I don't necessarily love, but it would just be trading bad pieces for bad pieces, I guess. But unless the Bulls, I guess, change their stance on wanting to take back salary for, you know, in 2019 as an example, then I don't really expect too much, because who would want to trade for Jabari Parker or Robin Lopez when you could potentially get those guys on a buyout market if you do not trade for them? So I'm not expecting too much from the Bulls in this instance or in this trade deadline, because I don't envision them changing their stance on wanting to take back money next season, which is likely what you would need to do to take for in order to move a contract like Jabari Parker's or Robin Lopez. So I'm not expecting much, guys. And, you know, maybe a random deal comes out here for Bobby Portis or Chris Dunn or something like that. But even then, I would expect the Bulls to be trying to considerably win a deal to move those guys that they maybe not enamored with, but guys they do like. So I'm not expecting much, but I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I think it's going to be a pretty quiet one for the Bulls. And in saying that, we're recording this during the deadline. So as I say that, I'm pretty sure there might be a deal that goes through, but maybe for cash considerations, not necessarily a player, but you know, who knows? But I'm not personally expecting much at all.
I'm with you, Mark. And actually, because of the three deals they made, the two with Houston and then the Thunder trade, they have reached their max of cash considerations that they can take in for this season at $5.2 million. Hey, I'm about to spend all this money. So we're not even going to get another jokey cash considerations trade. If they make a trade, it will be something big, like moving Bobby or moving Chris or, as you said, Jabari or Rolo. I'm with you. I don't think that they pull the trigger on any of that stuff based on what we've heard about their reluctance. Like, you could move Jabari because his huge contract could match up with that of a contract some other team's trying to get off of and has another year on it. But we keep hearing the Bulls don't want to take on bad money for next season. I don't know why. It's not like they're going to use that money in a different, more useful way. But that's what we're hearing.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not necessarily going to suggest this is what the Bulls should be doing. But Obviously, we just saw the Dallas Mavericks trade for Kristaps Porzingis, which was a huge deal. But what they also did in that deal was effectively take back bad salary. Now, they've pretty much ruled themselves out of being players in 2019 free agency based on what they currently have on their roster at this point. So then that comes from a franchise who is perceived to be in a pretty good market, one that has obviously recently won a title in the last 10 years or so, has an owner that's willing to spend, and they struggle to get free agents, but they've seemingly made the decision that they're going to take themselves out of free agency, absorb some contracts that way to get back some assets, and that asset obviously being Kristaps Porzingis. Now, if it's good enough for the Mavericks to do that, then I'm sort of questioning why the Bulls can't do something similar. Now, they're going to have around $40 million in cap space next season, so I'm not necessarily suggesting they absorb all of that cap space in bad contracts, but maybe $15 million of that $14 million. If you can take back someone like Brandon Knight or whoever it may be, or even Chandler Parsons from Memphis, something like that, and just have 1 year of their bad deal, and maybe you can get a first-round pick back for doing so. And then maybe you may be able to trade someone like Robin Lopez or Jabari Parker. But until you sort of soften on your stance that you don't want to impact your cap position next year, then why would any team come to the Bulls and say, yeah, we want to take Jabari Parker off your hands, and by the way, we'll give you something really good for it as well? It's just not going
to
happen.
I don't know how desperate the Clippers are, but since they just made their move to send Tobias Harris to the 76ers not even 12 hours ago, Matt and I were just discussing this same thing before our interview with you. Would you be interested at all in moving Gallinari to the Bulls? You know, his $21 million is going to be on the books for next year. We were just talking about this, you know, looking at his stats, he's actually been a pretty effective offensive player for the Clippers this year. And talking with some Clippers writers, you know, I don't know how desperate the Clippers are to get off that money in the next 24 hours, but clearing that cap space would put them even closer to that $70 million marker that they would need to have two max contracts. You know, it sounds like that they're trying to slide their way into at least closer to an AD deal, you know, and kind of push the Lakers even farther away from something like that. So I was asking, like, what would it take for a deal for that to happen? And, you know, the Bulls talk about like getting players that could help them now. Like Gallinari being on this roster for another year would help you win games. If you could get a first round pick, and it would be unlikely that the Clippers would give you back their own pick because the way that their roster looks right now, that might be back in the lottery. But if you can get the 76ers pick in 2020, which is, I know, protected, or that Heat pick unprotected in 2021, and even if you had to attach Portis to that deal, or maybe one or two of those Memphis second round picks, would you think about doing a deal like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good example of the deal that I'm talking about. Now, I wouldn't do it if it was no pick coming back, but if there's some sort of, you know, future asset that could come back that sort of,
right,
I guess, positions itself more along the rebuilding timeline, whether that's a first round pick from the Sixers, a Clippers pick, maybe something else, then that's exactly the kind of deal that I'm talking about, a sort of a downgraded version of what the Knicks did and what the Mavs did for Porzingis. So that's sort of what I'm hinting at. So if the Bulls can soften their stance on taking back, you know, $15 to $20 million of salary next season, I was thinking for a bad player, but Gallinari can obviously play a bit as well. So he would actually be a player that would impact the team in terms of wins, losses. So maybe that's something you need to consider as well, whether you want to actually have a player that can contribute and can help you win, given that the Bulls should be probably tanking at this point. So that's probably an added caveat to the deal that you sort of suggested there, whereas, you know, taking back Brandon Knight's probably not going to impact your winning at all. But yeah, I think that's exactly sort of the sort of deal I'm sort of suggesting, one that may or may not happen. I don't know, but it sort of makes sense for the Clippers, I guess, getting off that money. And like I said, Jabari's going to be an expiring deal. But so long as there's a good rational pick coming back for the Bulls that makes sense in taking on that salary, then I'm all for that rather than sort of doing nothing and just holding out hopes for free agency where you're probably going to have to overpay for two or three random role players who may or may not help the team next season.
Mark, I think one of the factors that always gets kind of muddled when Bulls fans get really excited about deadline and start throwing all sorts of crazy hypothetical trades around, and I think it's an issue with the Bulls front office as well and ownership, is that it seems like certain people overvalue what they have. You know, people are talking to Jordan and I about how about this trade with Bobby Portis and how about this trade for Chris Dunn? And they're talking about netting players and assets that just do not match up if we're being realistic about what Bobby Portis is worth on the trade market. What Chris Dunn, who looks like he is not a starting point guard in the NBA, is worth. And I think in some senses that kind of also is true for this Bulls organization. They tend to overvalue what they think they have. What are your thoughts on that?
I completely agree with that stance. I mean, traditionally that has always been a knock on the team under Paxson, and I don't see why that has necessarily changed. So, you know, in the examples that you just brought up, Chris Dunn and Bobby Portis, whilst I expect those two guys to potentially be on the block, I don't think they're seriously going to be on the block. I think it would take the Bulls to get back something pretty significant in order for them to move them, because of what you just said, that they typically value their own guys pretty highly. And for me personally, I'm not big fans of Chris Dunn and particularly Bobby Portis, who is coming up for an extension here or a new contract rather. They're the type of players who I would be trying to move pretty soon, because I don't necessarily see them as part of the rebuild moving forward. Chris Dunn, he turns 25 next month, and I think he's regressed this season, so I don't know why we're potentially budgeting him in as part of the rebuild as such. And for Bobby Portis, whilst he has his strong elements in his game, I just don't see what the point of him is when you've got Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. in your front court for the next hopefully 10 years or so. So those are the types of players I would be looking to trade now and just getting back something of note, because I think it's more likely that the Bulls just sort of lose these players in free agency or potentially lose value on these guys and sort of get rid of them at their lowest point, which is also something the Bulls typically tend to do as well.
Final thoughts on the trade deadline as we kind of near to the end here, and it, you know, as this conversation is happening, it seems like all of us are kind of saying, you know, with all the radio silence that's happening from the Bulls, it just sounds like at the end of the day, a move that happens seems like it's unlikely that it's anything big, anything that we're going to be want or happy with. Jabari Parker, Robin Lopez, more than likely those are going to be buyouts. And if the Bulls do something, it's going to be something very minor. I'm curious on your thoughts as far as looking ahead to this summer. The way that these trades have shifted, the way that teams are trying to stack up, not only for Anthony Davis, but the Tobias Harris trade now, what Charlotte is trying to do as far as what we heard about Marcus Saul, and now things kind of have stalled there, even in terms of all of that, and Boston's play for Anthony Davis, has it changed your perspective at all about where some of these tier one free agents want to go, tier two even wants to go, and your mindset at all about even the possibility of the Bulls spending this summer? And like, there, a lot of the optimist Bulls fans still think that the Bulls could be players for tier two guys. And like, guys like Kemba Walker would be the only person that I think we're in the parking lot of the arena to have a conversation about. Like, everybody else, I just think now is even less of a shot than we had at the beginning of this season to go out and get any of those guys. So has your stance changed at all, or have you felt pretty consistent throughout this year about landing free agents in 2019 and what tier the Bulls should be playing?
Look, I'm not suggesting here that the Bulls shouldn't be somewhat of players in 2019 in terms of free agency. If there's a good value role play to be had, then go about doing it. But any grand illusions of landing someone like Tobias Harris or Chris Middleton or someone of that nature who's not necessarily on the timeline of this rebuild, then I just don't see the point of it at all. So personally, if I look across the landscape of the NBA, you've got the two teams in New York and you've got the two teams in LA, plus a bunch of others who have space for max slots. And it sort of seems like the stars of the league are sort of congregating either to LA or they're heading to New York. Now, whether that's the Knicks or the Nets or the Lakers or the Clippers, if I'm a free agent, I'm thinking those teams before I'm ever thinking or considering the Bulls. And one of those teams is probably going to miss out on the big names like Durant and Kawhi Leonard and these sorts of players. Maybe even Anthony Davis gets traded to one of those teams. So if I'm one of those players that doesn't necessarily get that first option, I'm going to a team like, I don't know, the Nets. If I'm Jimmy Butler, I'm not considering the Bulls before I'm considering the Nets, or I'm not considering the Bulls before I consider the Clippers as a suggestion. So that pretty much, I guess, rules the Bulls out down to those sort of tiers B B and C type players, if we want to call it that, which may be headlined by the likes of Chris Middleton, Tobias Harris, DeMarcus Cousins, Kemba Walker, these types of players who, again, I don't necessarily know if they fit the timeline of the rebuild, and I don't know what maxing out those guys would really achieve. Like, why should the Bulls go after Chris Middleton in free agency, give that guy 4 years, $150-odd million, whatever it may take to get him in? I don't see the point in doing that when he doesn't necessarily fit the timeline. And as more as the Bulls go on, I actually think that this rebuild may extend itself in the timeline, because I'm not convinced that Dunn and LaVine are part of the future going forward. And if that's the case, then you really need to reevaluate your backcourt, and that may actually push your rebuild back further. Meaning, why would you even go into free agency even harder than you have to? So I just don't see the Bulls being a destination in free agency. Well, I should say that I don't think they should be a top tier destination. If they can find a role player or two on a good contract that may help improve or make life easy for the guys like Larry Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr., if you can bring in a veteran point guard that makes sense off the bench, then go for it. But any grand illusions of offering, you know, Chris Middleton a max deal or something like that, I want no part of that.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mark. We're talking with our buddy Mark Karanzolas here on Locked On Bulls. Mark, let's transition to, speaking of the rebuild taking kind of a back step this season, let's actually talk about what we're seeing on the court right now, not made-up trades that aren't going to happen. I mean, in your estimation, I don't know about you, I know it's hard, and a lot of Bulls fans have checked out, because it's that hard to watch right now, Jim Boylan's Bulls. Just, you know, between the injuries and the just really weak offensive execution that we're seeing on a nightly basis, I don't know about you, I'm having trouble finding, like, reasons to make myself keep watching other than I have to. Because it's a season that was supposed to be about chemistry and youth development, and we're talking about how, you know, Dunn and LaVine don't fit together at all and all this stuff. Is there anything right now that you're going to be watching for the remaining 30 games or so down the stretch? Because to me, it's all about I can't watch for development as long as they are playing under Jim Boylan. Would you agree with that, or do you think there's still useful things that we can accomplish in the remaining games on deck?
Yeah, well, look, I came to this realization a little bit before, because we're around 24 hours until the trade deadline sort of passes, and then I guess we move into the All-Star period. But after that, what really is there to watch for the Bulls, and what do we have to necessarily concern ourselves with? I would typically say maybe you focus on your younger players like Wendell Carter Jr. and obviously Chandler Hutchinson. You see what your rookies can develop into, but obviously those guys are out injured. Wendell Carter probably is not coming back for the remainder of the season. I guess Hutchinson may or may not come back, but who knows? Those injuries with the Bulls are never set on their timeline. It's reported 2 to 4 weeks, but who knows if it ends up being longer than that. So I would typically say the younger guys, the rookies, that they're the ones that have the hope that we want to watch, but they're not playing right now. So I don't know what there is necessarily to sort of factor in here post the trade period that actually would draw fans to watch the Bulls play basketball. And that sucks for us, given that we're Bulls podcasters. We put a lot of time into this team, and watching this product is quite difficult at the moment, but it's going to be probably even harder after the deadline, assuming the Bulls don't do much, because it'll be just spinning the tires on the same old stuff that we've seen all season. And I had Jordan on my podcast maybe, you know, a few days ago, and one of the things I raised on there was I'm having a hard time sort of evaluating the younger talent on this team because of Jim Boylan. Now, we've spoken about Chris Dunn, and Dunn hasn't been good this year, but has Dunn been bad because he's sort of regressed as a player and he's just maybe not as good as what we had hoped? Or is he regressing because of the coaching and the way the coach is trying to use him? And that's a question that I've sort of been juggling around and trying to work out or balance out how that sort of factors into everything. And it makes evaluating the talent on this roster pretty damn hard. So I would like to say, let's watch these younger guys. Let's see them develop. Let's see how they develop as individuals and as a collective. But I just don't know if that's going to happen under what we've seen under Boylan, which I think most players on this roster have sort of regressed this season, which is pretty damning for a rebuild that's in year two whilst we're watching other teams who are in a similar situation sort of go past the Bulls.
Yeah, you kind of feel bad. You feel bad for Chris Dunn as the player, but at some point as a Bulls fan, you're like, okay, we can't wait around forever for you. You know, the injuries stack up the consistency of never actually getting a full time to play. And then the injury that happened this year, coming back, not playing well with LaVine and Markkanen. LaVine and Dunn don't look like that they can play together. Both of them need the ball in their hands to score. Dunn's scoring went away from the mid-range. He can't finish at the rim. He's not getting to the free throw line enough. The turnovers haven't changed. Like, it just, it's all been kind of a pile-on effect for Dunn. And like I told you on Bulls HQ, I was like, you know, the confidence factor, we've heard that a ton, just not from us just saying it, but Casey Johnson brought it up with us about a month ago. He said that's been his story all along, even going back to high school, even going back to his younger days. It's just all about confidence with him. And you can say that about a lot of NBA players, but that's stuck with him forever. So I wonder about that too. And he's had a difficult, difficult time. So, but for Bulls fans, it's like, dude, you're going to have a contract that's coming up in less than a year. That's part on his mind, too, the injuries and everything else going on. And on top of all of that, the losing doesn't help either. So all of that combined together, it's like at some point we can't wait around forever to watch you figure it out. So that's where I think I stand with Chris Dunn, too. It's like I feel like he can be a better player somewhere else, and the time is ticking, and I know the Bulls don't want to give up on him because – that's another factor that I was thinking about. Maybe both of you can weigh in on this. It's like, do the Bulls not want to give up on Dunn because, first in part, he was part of the Jimmy Butler trade, but also second in part, they really liked him in the drafts when he originally came out and they were going to take him. And so there's a twofold there, and that would just be doubling down on a mistake and just kind of giving up in all facets of Chris Dunn. And would that look like a complete failure? I don't know. I'm asking you both, like, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, part of it's definitely optics. I'm sure that comes into play. Obviously, Dunn was a key part of the Jimmy Butler trade. So to sort of see him, I guess, wane and give up on him now, that probably wouldn't look good after he showed some signs last season. And now, obviously, he's regressed. And if you were to give up on him now, it doesn't look great. But at the same time, like you sort of alluded to there, Jordan, you're just going to make the right call. And if the right call is to move on from Chris Dunn because you don't feel he is that point guard of the future, then just do it. I think people will have more respect for the franchise if they just make the right call, the right hard direct call when needed, rather than sort of floundering along and waiting until we get into the fourth year of Chris Dunn and it becomes even more clear that he may not be the point guard of the future. And we're at the trade deadline in 12 months' time wondering what we can get for Chris Dunn, who's going to be needing a new deal at that point. And I don't know, his value is probably at an all-time low, and it's possible that his value is even lower next season, assuming Boylan comes back. So, I don't know. It kind of all comes down to what they want to do with their coaching. Now, maybe they don't give up on Chris Dunn if they know right now that they're not bringing back Jim Boylan, and maybe they find someone more like Fred Hoiberg. I guess the Bulls have to sort of oscillate between going from a player's coach to some hard ass, so it makes sense for them to go back to a player's coach next season if Jim Boylan isn't retained, but I don't know. We saw good things from Chris Dunn last season under Fred Hoiberg. He's obviously regressed this season. But if the front office know now that Boylan isn't their guy for next season and they want to move forward with someone who makes a little bit more sense for how the NBA should be played, or how basketball should be played in the NBA these days, then maybe you keep Dunn and just sort of hang on and see if you can sort of recapture some of that form and that progression that he showed last season. But it ultimately comes down to what they want to do with coaching and how they want the Bulls to play. And if they want to mimic what they're doing here, then I don't think Chris Dunn fits.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm with you, certainly when it comes to Dunn's trade value and him being a perfect example of what we were talking about earlier with the organization valuing a player more than what he's actually worth. And because they wanted Chris Dunn to be a really important piece of the rebuild, because he was a piece of the Jimmy trade, they might be reluctant to be giving up on this guy. But, I mean, we're talking about the same organization that wanted Campaign so badly in the 2015 draft that they had to go out and get him in a trade with OKC that everybody pretty much agrees across the board is one of the worst trades in franchise history. This is also the team that nearly traded Jimmy Butler on draft night a year prior to when they actually traded Jimmy, because they so valued Chris Dunn in that draft as, you know, the solid two-way point guard for Providence, who was like so accomplished in his collegiate career, and they really wanted him to be the new, you know, nitty-gritty offensive and defensive point guard to replace Derrick Rose. And so they didn't get him in the draft, so they went out and got him in a trade when they traded Jimmy a year later. So, I mean, this is the kind of stuff that we see from these guys. They become so obsessed with individual players who they scout and fall in love with and think that they are better than they are. And that is a real problem with this team. But guess what? Right now, we have seen Chris Dunn look decent in the games when Zach LaVine has been out. Zach LaVine operates better and is more dominant offensively when he's not worried about Chris Dunn being the one running the offense. Chris Dunn has had trouble making his teammates better and finding good looks for his teammates when both have been on the floor or when just Chris Dunn has been on the floor. Chris Dunn does not look like a starting caliber point guard when it comes to his court vision and basketball IQ. To me, that is the glaringly worrisome thing about Chris Dunn, and it is why I think that they should move on from him. Because if you're keeping LaVine or Dunn because you realize that they don't work well together in your backcourt the way you hoped when you made that trade, LaVine, given his contract and what he's shown us this season, is clearly the more valuable player worth keeping.
I think it's small sample size when you're talking about LaVine and Dunn, though. Like, I get what you're saying, and it's been clear as day, and we even talked about, too, is like, Dunn and LaVine are a problem, but also, too, you got to take a look at what LaVine and Markkanen are doing, too, because, like, that's a huge effect, too, is like, the fact that LaVine is just driving to the basket and scoring there has also had a huge effect on what Markkanen's doing. Like, I've told you, Matt, like, Markkanen on the floor and having to rely on him as your sole three-point shooter has dipped his numbers a ton. When Markkanen's on the floor and LaVine is off, he's a 12% better three-point shooter. And that's just because they've had to weigh heavily on him shooting threes because nobody else will do it. Like, there's other numbers, too, to compare. But you're right. You're right. It is small sample size, though. Only six games without LaVine and Dunn on the floor. But I see the problem.
Mark, feel free to chime in here, too. But, like, Jordan, you're talking about LaVine and Markkanen being a problem. I think Dunn and Markkanen is a bigger problem. Dunn can't even, like,
but what
get
about last
Markkanen
year? They played good
on
together
mismatches
last year, though. Fair. And especially under Jim Boylen. Under Jim Boylen, Markkanen and Dunn didn't play at all together this year. So that's a little unfair.
So, basically,
okay, fine. But I would rather have LaVine and Markkanen playing together. Mark,
well,
what about
I
you?
I was just going to say, like, you two are basically just playing at the two voices that I have in my head right now. I mentioned before how it's hard to really sort of, how it's hard to make an assessment on these players in a Jim Boylen offense. And the two sort of positions that you guys are both taking now is exactly the back and forth that I have on a daily basis in my own mind. And I just keep going back and forward to maybe these guys aren't just good and maybe we overvalued or maybe we thought they were better than what they are. But then I sort of swing back and say, but hang on, we haven't necessarily seen these guys in a large sample size. They barely played under Fred Hoiberg last season. We saw Markkanen and Dunn play really well together under Hoiberg last season. Obviously, it didn't necessarily work with LaVine last season, given he was coming back from the injury. But we didn't see all three together under Hoiberg. We've only seen all three together under Boylen. And because I weigh that down so heavily, because I don't know what Jim Boylen is trying to achieve here, I get left confused. And this is the question. This is why this season has been a disaster to me, because I don't know if we've necessarily learnt enough to have a solid, absolute answer about any of the questions that we're sort of asking ourselves now. In time, maybe it proves that Chris Dunn is a bad player, but I don't know. Maybe he could be a decent NBA starting point guard. Maybe he won't. Maybe he will. I don't know the answer to that, because I don't think this season has proven that, has answered that question definitively this season, because of what the team has sort of had to undergo given the coaching change. I think that's been a huge impact on the team, and I tweeted it out the other day, but the advanced numbers basically haven't changed under Boylen and Hoiberg, and that was meant to. That was what the coaching change was done for. The bad habits were meant to be erased under Jim Boylen. That's what John Paxson effectively got rid of Hoiberg for, that there was too many bad habits forming under Hoiberg. And maybe that was the case. Maybe that was happening behind the scenes to what we couldn't necessarily see. But that hasn't been erased on the court. So maybe these players are just bad players. Maybe they're just dumb players that don't have the basketball IQ that you need. Maybe they're not enough two-way players on this roster to actually make this rebuild worth it going forward. But I can't convincingly say that and put that position forward, because I'm still left questioning Well, is it possible for these players to sort of develop as individuals and as a core in the system they're sort of growing in? And I can't answer that right now. And that's the disturbing part of this season.
I think that's fair. And that's like why this show is so weird, because it's just a daily stream of consciousness of like the fight every single day. And I do this, and I think Matt does too, is you constantly fight. It's like one day you're like, okay, Dunn's the problem. Then you go back, and then a few days later, it's like, wait, it could be Levine. That's why Dunn has been playing so bad. And then you're like, wait, Lauri Markkanen's having troubles, and wait, maybe it's Levine's problem. It's just like, it's all of these factors. And I think combining the two seasons together, we've seen is like there's so many factors that you got to consider, and sometimes we forget about in the short term because of everything that's played out in just the short 18 months of a rebuild. The one thing that I wanted to get back to, and we can get off of Dunn, was the timetable. That's the biggest thing here, is going back to what I said, you can't wait around forever because he is owed a contract and he's going to want that. And probably even with how bad it's been this year, probably going to get owed, I don't know what the ballpark is, but more money than what the Bulls should pay him, right? And if he's not going to start on your team and can't even facilitate an offense, I don't think we can wait around. So it's the time is ticking, and you can't wait around for a guy that's been inconsistent and also injury plagued. So that's where I get stuck, and it's like you feel bad for Chris Dunn, the player, but a Bulls team needs a point guard, and we can't wait around forever. So that's where I get left in the dust, because I really do like Chris Dunn.
Yeah,
so.
And I mean, to Matt's point, I mean, if Dunn isn't the guy, then you've got to make that call, not because of just of him being the player he is, but you're building around two front court guys, two players who effectively need the ball given to them. They're not guards that are going to walk the ball up and can sort of do a James Harden type thing where they don't necessarily have to pass to anyone to get off a shot. This is two big guys that need the ball delivered to them in their spots. And if you don't have a point guard in place or guards around them, hopefully multiple playmakers around them that can get the ball to them in their spots, then you're not only impacting the development of that specific guard who's in place, but you're also hurting the guys like Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. too, which is obviously what the Bulls shouldn't be trying to achieve. So if Dunn isn't the guy, then you do have to make that call, and it's going to be a hard call, but you are on a timeline. And I get this all the time on Twitter from fans that, you know, players A, B, C are young. There's plenty of time. Don't, you know, chill out. You have to relax, these sorts of comments all the time. But there isn't that much time, because Chris Dunn is coming up to next season will be the last year on his rookie year deal. You'll have to make a decision on him eventually. And that decision may be better made now rather than next year, when his value is probably potentially going to be even lower. So whilst I can sit here and say I don't know the answer, and I think that's fair to say, you just have to make a call, because there isn't that much more time. Because Dunn and Levine are older than what we perceive them to be. Levine's already on his second contract. Dunn will be on his second contract soon, and he's older than Levine. So if these guys aren't the answer, then you have to make the hard call sooner rather than later.
Man, it's really depressing when truths are spoken back to you, and you know that they are truths, and it just, man, it hurts to hear them every time. Nonetheless, Mark, it was great chatting with you, man. We appreciate you coming on the pod. Keep up the great work for Bulls Blogger. And of course, all of our Locked On Bulls fans should also be listening to the Bulls HQ pod. Mark does a great job with that and has great guests as well. You can listen to him and see Red Fred go back and forth in a different medium than just Twitter rants at each other. It's amazing content, because let's be honest, Mark and C. Red Fred are the grumpy old men couple that we Bulls fans really, truly need right now. Mark, take care of yourself, man. Keep up the good work.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on. Speak soon.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Once again, want to thank Mark Karanzolas for jumping on the show. Follow all of his written work over at Bloggable, SB Nation's site for all things Chicago Bulls. His podcast, Bulls HQ, go give that a follow and a subscribe on anywhere you find podcasts. Go give him a follow on Twitter too, MK Hoops on Twitter for all things Chicago Bulls. Tomorrow, NBA trade deadline ends at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Central. Matt and I will be following the trade deadline all day long. So follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Be hitting the record button right as soon as the trade deadline ends, and have that episode out for you as soon as possible. But the Locked On Podcast Network will be going live for the trade deadline ends on the YouTube channel. For the first time ever, the Locked On Podcast Network will be live. on the Lockdown Fantasy Basketball YouTube channel, 1:30 Eastern Time tomorrow. That's Thursday, February 7th. Locked On Fantasy Basketball channel, hosted by David Locke and fantasy expert Josh Lloyd, plus all the local experts of the Locked On Podcast Network. So if the Chicago Bulls make a trade, you will hear either Matt or I or both of us on there, as well as everybody else from all across the nation and internationally as well, for all the local biggest stories of the day happening. We'll break down all the deals, give the fantasy perspective as well as the local angles. It starts Thursday, 1:30 Eastern Time, 90 minutes before the trade deadline on YouTube at the Locked On Fantasy Basketball channel. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, saying we'll see it tomorrow for the NBA trade deadline. Let's cross our fingers. Maybe the Bulls will do something. Maybe they won't, but we'll find out tomorrow. So thanks for hanging out with us here at Locked On Bulls. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan, Matt, and Mark, we are out. Deuces.
You know, we got Bulls across our chest, and
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.